have preached on this psalm, Psalm 55, before. Some years ago, I preached here a series that I labelled Songs in the Night. It was a series in which we looked at some of the most painful psalms, psalms where the psalmists are struggling with painful emotional experiences. And we dealt with this psalm in the context of that series. I think that sermon is still on the church website. I've not changed very much in my understanding of the psalm, so I'm sure I'm going to be saying many of the same things tonight that I said then. If you were to go back and listen to that sermon again, I'm sure you would find that there's a great deal of overlap between what I said then and what I say now. What was the situation that provoked David to write this psalm? It was written at a time when he was feeling appalling stress. As I read the psalm, I don't think he was in immediate danger, but he was feeling under huge pressure. He was feeling tremendously stressed. What was the cause of his stress? Well, essentially, that he was living in a place that he hated. Or at least he hated what was going on in that place. He was the king, and presumably the place where he was living was Jerusalem. But as he looked around Jerusalem, there was so much he saw that unsettled him. So much that he thought was just horrible. He talks about it in verses 9 to 11. Destroy, O Lord, divide their tongues, for I see violence and strife in the city. There were people in the city whose hearts were full of violent thoughts, who wanted to divide people and set them at one another's throats. Day and night, they go round it on its walls. There were people who were fomenting trouble in the city, who were out to cause conflict. Iniquity and trouble are within it. David could sense the stirring of anger and bitterness that seemed to be infecting this city in which he lived and over which he ruled. Ruin is in its midst. It was as if things were beginning to disintegrate. It was as if that society was beginning to fall apart. He had worked so hard to build a harmonious, just society, but it seemed that it was crumbling away. And it was crumbling away because of certain people who were working to undermine it and divide it. Oppression and fraud or deceit do not depart from its marketplace. If you went into the marketplace, you would hear people whispering, conspiring, and so much of what they were saying was simply untrue. People were spreading lies around. David the king is, you would say, in control. He's the ruler of Jerusalem. And yet it doesn't feel like that to him, because he's aware of all these undercurrents. He's aware of all these people whispering and lying and trying to cause trouble, trying to undermine the life of that city and David's own kingship. There were people there in that city who hated David personally. And that's what underlay their actions. He talks about it in verse 3, they drop trouble upon me, and in anger they bear a grudge against me. There were people who were full of anger against David because of the things he'd done, because of the way he ruled. And all the time they were carrying this grudge. He was aware of it. And among them there was one man in particular who was a constant grief to David. David talks about him in verses 12 onwards. This man had once been one of David's closest friends, but now he had turned against David, and secretly he was working to undermine David. In verse 13, David says, "It is you, a man, my equal." He was a man of the same social status as David. "And my companion." There was a time when they had worked together, when they had gone around together, when they had been friends. "My familiar friend." This was somebody who had had a very close, intimate relationship with David, one of the people whom David trusted most. He was one of David's advisors. Verse 14, "We used to take sweet counsel together." He was a man who professed to be a believer, to share David's faith. They worshipped together. "Within God's house we walked in the throng." And now this man has turned against David. David says in verse 12, "It's not an enemy who taunts me." That would be easier to bear. If it was someone who had always been an out-and-out opponent of David, that would have been easier to cope with. But what was hurting David was that this was one of his closest friends who had turned against him and who was now working in the shadows to undermine him, spreading lies about him, ready to stab him in the back. Not that this man was open in what he was doing. That was, again, one of the most horrible features of the situation, that when this man was talking to David face to face, he still used nice words. He still talked as if he was David's friend. Verse 20, "My companion stretched out his hand against his friends. He violated his covenant. His speech was smooth as butter." The translators have put it all in the past tense, but I don't think it is that. His speech is smooth as butter. Yet war is in his heart. He is a man who, when he's talking to David, still can smile so sweetly, who can talk so pleasantly, but actually in his heart, there's war. He is determined to destroy David. His words are softer than oil, and yet those words are actually drawn swords. Every word he speaks is calculated somehow to cut at David. Of course, this man isn't alone. This man is the leader of the clique that's working away to destroy David. But there are others clearly who are with him. David puts it in the plural in verse 15, "Let death steal over them, let them go down to Sheol alive, for evil is in their dwelling place and in their heart." A group of people all around David, motivated by grudges, anger, hatred, wanting to destroy him and yet still smiling to his face. Doesn't know who he can trust. Doesn't know who's in the plot. Doesn't know who's telling him the truth. It's all so stressful. What can he do? He can't confront the leader of the conspiracy and the man who's stirring up all this opposition. If he does, the man will just look bewildered. "What do you mean, David? I'm your friend. What do you mean I'm trying to harm you. I've never done anything to harm you. David, how can you mistrust me? David, what? How could you put such horrible accusations against me? David, you're paranoid. If he confronts him, the man will just profess complete innocence. David can't defend himself because these aren't attacks out in the open. He can't punish this man because this man hasn't actually done anything that he can prove. And David can't escape. There's no way he can get away from this situation, get away from the city, get away from this group of men who hate him so much. Why not? Because David is the king. David's the man who's steering the ship. David's the man who's flying the airliner. He can't just opt out. God has given him that position. God has given him that responsibility. He has to be there in Jerusalem, caring for the people, caring for his country. God has put that huge burden upon him. He can't abdicate. He can't walk away. You know, sometimes people who are feeling stress in a situation wish that they had some higher position, because they think, oh, the only reason I'm feeling this stress is because I'm one of the little guys. I'm one of the people at the bottom that everybody can push around. I'm one of the people who's got to do as he's told. If only I were in charge. If only I was up there. I mean, once you get to the top, you're free, aren't you? Once you get to the top, you can make decisions, you can sort things out, you can... It isn't like that. It's just because David is at the top that he's feeling such stress. He can't walk away. He can't resign. He can't wash his hands of the situation. He's got to carry that burden. How does he feel about it? How does David feel in a situation like this? He just feels desperate. That comes out even in the opening couple of verses. Give ear to my prayer, O God. Hide not yourself from my plea for mercy. I'm pleading for mercy. I need your help so much, O God. And tend to me, answer me. I'm restless in my complaint, and I moan because of the noise of the enemy. When did you last moan? When did you last find yourself just sitting, just groaning, moaning aloud? Hurting so much that it just forced itself out through your lips. That's David. He's just sitting there moaning. He's desperate. But I think there's something else. He's not just desperate. He feels deserted. Perhaps that's too strong a way of putting it. But he can't be confident that God is with him and that God is helping him, that God is on his side. Read again those first two verses. Give ear to my prayer, O God. Hide not yourself from my plea for mercy. Attend to me. Answer me. Four times he pleads with God just to listen to him. If he were confident, if he were certain that God was listening to him, then he wouldn't need to say it over and over and over again. But in this stressful, painful situation he's in, he has to keep saying it. And see, the way he puts it, Give ear to my prayer. Oh God, please, please turn your ear towards me. Don't hide yourself. He feels that God is hiding himself, that God is turning away and not looking at him. Attend to me. He feels that God isn't paying him attention. He certainly feels that God hasn't answered him. Answer me. He's desperate and he's lost his confidence that God is really watching and listening and involved. And then, thirdly, he's terrified. My heart, verse 4, is in anguish within me. He's terrified to the point where it's making him ill. His heart is pounding like a steam hammer within him. He's having panic attacks. The terrors of death have fallen upon me. Fear and trembling come upon me. There are those times when he's just sitting there and it's like a wave overwhelming him. And he just starts shaking from head to foot. Trembling come upon me. He's not coping, is he? He's coming to bits. It's affecting him physically. These circling enemies, always there, night and day, 7 days a week, there they are. And all the time David's wondering, what are they doing? What's going to happen next? What? Who's involved? How much of what they're saying is And as it goes on, as the stress continues, it's making David ill. Wakes up sweating from head to foot. And he starts shaking and trembling. And fourthly, he feels trapped. He feels he's in this situation. And there's no way out of it. No way, nowhere to run to. And nowhere to hide. Just see what he says in verse 12, where he says, if it were an adversary, a known enemy who was dealing insolently with me, then I could hide from him. But I can't hide. I can't escape in this situation. I'm just trapped in it. Nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. He puts it in such graphic terms in verses 6 to 8. I say, oh, that I had wings like a dove. They're the most famous verses in this psalm. Oh, that I had the wings of a dove. I would fly away and be at rest. That's what I want. I just want out of this situation. A dove can just spread its wings and fly away. And it's free. Oh, if only I could fly away like that dove. The dove escapes. I would fly away. He says, if only I had a way of escaping from all of this. The dove flies away to a place of rest. I would fly away and be at rest. If only I could rest. If only I could relax for a day, for a week. If only for a little while the pressure would lift so that I could just be at rest. The dove can fly away far away. If only I could put a distance between myself and the situation, between myself and the pressures. The dove can go and fly off into the wilderness, into a place where they don't have people, where the dove doesn't have people all around. If only I could do that. If only I could escape just from people. If only I could be on my own in a wilderness place where people aren't watching me, where people aren't harassing me, where people aren't crowding me, where people aren't making demands on me, where people aren't upsetting me. If only I could get away from people, says David. Oh, to have a lodge in the wilderness with no people around me. If only I could get somewhere where I could feel safe, I would hurry to find a shelter from the raging wind and tempest. Have you ever felt the way David felt? Desperate. I can't take any more of this. God, just spare me. Spare me. Don't put me through it any longer. Deserted. Oh God, why haven't you answered yet? Please turn to me. Terrified, cracking up, feeling those panic attacks, feeling I'm going to crack under this pressure. And trapped. It's not fair. I'm trapped here in this situation. I just want to escape. I just want to rest. I just want to put a distance between myself and what's going on. I just want to be on my own. I just want to feel safe. Have you ever been where David is at? We know from the Gospels that the Lord Jesus came to that place. Perhaps the most obvious example is after he gets the news that his forerunner, his cousin, his friend, John the Baptist, has been executed by Herod. And Jesus says, I want to get away. I've got to get away. Says to his disciples, let's go off into the wilderness and rest for a while. Away from the crowds. And the crowds won't let Jesus get away. Wherever he goes, they follow him. He goes off into the wilderness and he finds that they're there before him. Demanding that he teaches them, demanding that he heals their sick, demanding that he listens to all their stories, and then demanding that he should become their king so that he can carry on feeding them and providing for them. And then when Jesus finally sent them away and crosses in the boat, he finds that they've run round the lake so that they're ready to intercept him at the other end. Oh, Jesus knew what it was to say, I've got to get away. I've got to escape from the stress. And then to find I can't. I can't. I'm trapped. I've been put here in this situation by God and there's no way out for me. When I preached on this psalm before, I asked the question, what did David do? Here in this situation, how did David cope? How did he respond? And the first point I made in answering that question was simply this. He didn't run away. And that's the thing, above all, that I would want you to remember as we think about this psalm. David didn't run away. He wanted to so much. I wish I had the wings of a dove. I would just fly away in the wilderness. I would just leave this city behind me. I'd leave these people behind me. I'd leave the problems behind me. I'd leave the responsibilities behind me. I'd leave the stress behind me. I would go off and I would be at rest. And he didn't. Because he couldn't. Because he knew God had put him in that situation. He knew that God had made him king. God had given him those responsibilities. David never chose to be king, did he? It wasn't by his choice. There he was, just a lad looking after the sheep back home, when suddenly Prophet Samuel turns up on the farm. David doesn't rush up to Samuel saying, "It's my ambition to be king. How about anointing me?" I don't think it crossed his mind. Certainly didn't cross anybody else's. David wasn't summoned into the presence of Samuel. All his other brothers were. David was just getting on, looking after the sheep. But Samuel calls for him. And Samuel lays hands on him. And Samuel pours oil on him. And suddenly David realizes that he's been singled out. That God has given to him the destiny of kingship and all the responsibilities it's going to bring. He never chose it. He could have used that as an excuse in this situation, couldn't he? Here, where the stress has reached this level, David could have turned to God and said, "It's not fair. I never asked for this. I never chose this. And I've got the right to opt out of this. You never consulted me. You never asked me whether I was willing to be king. And it's not fair." You may feel that about some situation, some responsibility that God has laid upon you. You didn't ask for it. You didn't choose it. It was simply placed upon you. I heard a certain lady say, don't get the wrong impression, I'm not talking about anybody sitting here now. I heard a certain lady say, "I never asked to be a pastor's wife. And I didn't marry a pastor." She had married a man involved in a secular occupation. She had no reason to think that he was ever going to be a pastor. But things had changed. He had been put in the position where he had to accept the care of a particular congregation because there was no one else to do it. And that meant that she had to accept the role of being the pastor's wife. And she found it a crushing responsibility. She said, "I never asked for that. I never chose that." And you could see she felt that there was something unfair about that. Well, David could have taken that attitude, couldn't he? He could have said, "I never asked to be put in this position. And I don't see why I should stay in it." He could have run away. Or he could have said, "It was unfair. Because when I was put in that position, I was so young. I didn't really know what I was doing. I didn't really know what it would involve." After all, David was only a lad, wasn't he? When he was anointed and when he became king. He was only a lad when he stepped forward to face Goliath. That was the first step that launched him towards his kingship. It would have been so easy for him to say, when we're young, we make mistakes. When we're young, we make choices that you'd never make later. Surely I can't be expected to carry on now and have to stick to what I decide when I was really so young and didn't know what I was doing. Again, I've heard people say that about their marriages. I've heard a woman say, "I was so young when I got married. I didn't know what it meant. I didn't know myself. I was too young to make those sorts of decisions. And I've changed so much over the years. I've got to opt out now. I've got to start again. I've got to leave this man. I've got to find someone else. God can't blame me. I was so too young to know what I was doing back then. Again, David could have said, when I became king, well, I knew that it would involve fighting against enemies, foreign enemies, people like Goliath, and I accepted that. But I never expected it to involve this. I never expected it to involve being hated by my own people. I never thought it would involve having to live with my own friends turning against me and lying about me and stabbing me in the back. I never thought it would involve having to rule over a city where people were circling around trying to undermine from within. I was prepared to be a warrior. I was prepared to fight battles out in the open. But I never bargained for this. It's not fair to expect me to. I'm opting out. David could have run away and used that as his excuse. Or David could simply have said, I can't cope. I cannot cope. David could have said, I have no option but to run away now. I'm cracking up. I can't do the job any longer. You can't rule as king when you're suddenly having panic attacks, when you can't sleep at night. You can't do the job properly when you're just coming to pieces. I can't do it, so I've got to run away. He could have said that, couldn't he? He could have used any of those rationales for running away. I never chose this position. I was too young to know what I was doing. I never bargained for the form that this stress would take. It wasn't in the deal. And I can't cope. I can't take it. I can't do the job. Oh, I'm off. I'm going to fly off into the wilderness. He didn't. By grace, by God's amazing grace, David the king pressed on for the sake of the people God had given him to rule over. He didn't opt out. He didn't run away. What did he do? He spread out the whole situation before God. And he did so honestly. As I say, those opening verses, he makes it plain the doubts he has about whether God is listening. Don't, please give ear. Don't hide yourself. He describes his own feelings honestly. He describes how he's cracking up. Have you thought about David's honesty at this point? Notice the heading of the psalm, to the choir master. When David had written this hymn, this psalm, he didn't then hide it away in a drawer under lock and key. He handed it over to the choir master to be sung in the temple. David was not afraid to let people know that the terrors of death had fallen on him, that fear and trembling had come upon him, that he was a man who could panic, that he was a man who could feel such weakness. he could spread those things out honestly before God. And having spread them out honestly before God, he wasn't afraid to admit to other people that he had been there. David, in this psalm, describes the situation he's in, describes the feelings he has about the situation. He lays it all out before God. Too often, that is the Christian's last resort. We spread out our situations before everybody else. When we're under stress, we pick up the phone to tell other people all that we're going through and what's going on and how we explain it and how we interpret it. David knew that the one to whom he needed to talk, the one before whom he needed to spread it all out, was the living God. And he did so often. And we're told in verse 16 that he prayed evening and morning and at noon. There are times, you know, when a situation is so big, so complicated, that we can't see it all as a whole. We can't think it through as a whole. We can't even pray about it as a whole. It's just too monstrous. And there are those times when we've got to break things down very small. When all you can do is pray in the morning that God will bring you through that morning. And pray at noon to thank God that he brought you through the morning. And to lay out before him the things you're going to be facing in the afternoon. And then to pray in the evening that God will keep you safe through the night. And that he'll be keeping things under control during the night hours. There are times when you've got to break your prayers down small. That's what brought David through this crisis. The fact that he had that morning, evening, noontime relationship with God. He reminded himself that this stressful situation would come to an end. In verse 19, he says, God will give ear and humble them. He who is enthroned from of old. It says in verse 23, you, O God, will cast them down. Often when we're in stressful situations, one of the hardest things is that there's this feeling this is going to go on forever. There's no light at the end of this tunnel. And there always is a light at the end of the tunnel. Just often we can't see it. David reminded himself that God will intervene in the end. There is no affliction that a Christian goes through that will go on forever. It can't. Because at some point, our life here on earth is going to end. At some point, the darkness is going to break. At some point, the dawn is going to come. At some point, we're going to step into a world where there are no more tears and no more shadows and no more stresses. There will come a point at which God will crush all our enemies. All the things that have afflicted us and troubled us down through the years. But we need to remind ourselves of that. When we find ourselves saying, oh, it's just going on and on and on and on. It's always going to be like this, isn't it? Then we've got to say, no, it isn't. No, it isn't. Because God is going to end it in his own way and in his own time. The psalmist reminds himself of other situations that God had changed. Did you notice in verse 9, the psalmist says, destroy, O Lord, divide their tongues. What's he referring to there? When did the Lord divide the tongues of a vicious, horrible community? A city that had been given over to evil. David's thinking about Babel, isn't he? We read that God came down and divided their tongues. He broke up the coalition of people who were planning together and plotting together. That's what he did at Babel, wasn't it? And now David is saying, well, look, if you did that then you can do it again. He reminds himself of situations in the past where God has intervened. All right, you've got this horrible, stressful situation now. Is it the first horrible, stressful situation you've been in? Maybe it is. But for most of us, we can say, no, I went through such and such, I went through such and such. Yes, I went through them because God intervened and he brought them to an end. And we can point to other situations involving other people where God intervened in wonderful ways to bring them to an end. We think of people in the Bible who are marvellously delivered. Daniel in the lion's den. Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego in the furnace. God intervened. He does. He doesn't let situations go on indefinitely. He reminds himself that he can't be harmed in the long run. Verse 18, he redeems my soul in safety. I'm going to be safe, says David. I'm going to be safe. Right now I feel as if I'm cracking up. Right now I feel as if I can't cope. But I'm going to be safe in the long run because God makes me safe in the long run. And above all, David trusts. Verse 22, cast your burden on the Lord. That's what he has to learn. To cast this burden on the Lord. To say, I can't do anything about this situation. And therefore I'm going to leave the Lord to do it. I can't deal with these secret opponents. I can't stop them from spreading their lies. I can't stop them from undermining the unity of the community. I can't do anything. That's my burden, all right? Well, I'm going to have to leave God to do the things that need to be done. When there is something we can do in a situation, we ought to do it. But then there comes a point where we say, there's nothing I can do in this situation. And then we've got to leave it with God. Cast your burden on the Lord, and he will sustain you. What are the closing words of the psalm? I will trust in you. It's the only answer David has. I'm not going to run away. I'm going to trust you. I'm not going to run away. I'm going to trust you. Not going to run away. I'm going to trust you. That's the lesson David learned. It was the lesson that the Lord Jesus learned by experience. He learned obedience by the things he suffered, put into ever more stressful situations where the temptation to run away became more and more acute. Gethsemane. When the ultimate panic attack overcame him and he lay on the ground, sweating, as it were, great drops of blood, even then he could have run away from the cross. But he doesn't, because he trusted. I will trust in you. Can you trust? Can you trust the one who knows it all, who has been there before you, and who has promised grace to help in time of need? Can you trust the Lord Jesus?